Pay cuts and pay raises are always top of mind for federal employees. Now, though, with the 2016 budget debate opening up, several bills take aim at those pay levels and benefits. And that's prompted a lot of comments from you at federalnewsradio.com. Web manager Julia Ziegler joined me to relay what you and your colleagues are saying.
The comment boards on federalnewsradio.com are just, they're going crazy over the past week or so. And it all started with Mike Causey's column on cost of living adjustments. And you and I actually talked about that recently as well. And right now, if cost of living adjustments were calculated today, retirees would be in line for 0% COLA adjustment or raise, if you will. Of course, that's not the case. They still have a few more months to go before we all figure out or realize what they will be making in 2016. Needless to say, lots of comments on Mike Causey's columns about cost of living adjustments.
And then along comes U.S. Representative Tom Rice of South Carolina.
Oh, that's right, Tom. And as you know, he introduced a bill recently that would cut the pay of federal employees that make more than $100,000 a year. And he would cut their pay by 8.7%. So this then led to a discussion on the comment boards about whether feds could make more in the private sector. Because, of course, people saying, oh, my goodness, if they cut federal employees' salary by 8.7%, how many people would be, you know, trying to scramble out the door? So it has been a busy, busy week on the comment boards.
I wonder why he decided on 8.7%. Why not 9
or that 8? I don't know. Yeah, we should get the, you should invite the congressman on. It's interesting. Mike called, one of the things that Mike Causey said was that the congressman did not have any co-sponsors for that bill as of yet.
I can understand if you have the philosophy that government should be smaller. There are ways to make government smaller, but not ruin the government that you have left over.
Right.
This seems like a way of just harming everybody for not a lot of savings.
Yeah, so that is what we got, you know, some of the commenters on the comment board saying. And when it comes down to this debate over pay, here's what one person said. They said, conservatives and liberals are always grappling over whether civil servants are overpaid or underpaid. The most believable report, or actually summary of a report I read, was that some are, some aren't, and the more educated and or high demand professionals tend to be underpaid, and those living in high cost of living areas tend to be overpaid. And I think there's something to be said for that, right? You get into this issue of maybe some of the folks who are lower down the GS scale, you know, the GS5s, the GS7s, maybe they would make, you know, these are your janitors and folks like that. Maybe they are making more money in the government than they would be making in the private sector.
Well, I think that's why a lot of those types of jobs have been privatized over the
right.
decades and given to contractors, the maintenance operations of buildings, because contractors can get away with lower salaries.
Right. And then, of course, you've got the folks on the higher end of the pay scale, you know, the doctors, the lawyers within government, the folks in the tech world specifically, who I think a lot would argue could be making, you know, double, triple, or even more in salary than they do in the public sector. And that's what another commenter said. This person said, that's the big difference between government and the private sector. You don't have the extremes between the highest paid and lowest paid employees in government. Lower skilled government employees, especially those who have been working long enough to get several step increases, do significantly better than in the private sector. At the top, though, it would be difficult to claim, for instance, that the Secretary of Defense is overpaid. Whatever job in the private sector is most comparable would pay vastly more. And I think you could probably say that, right, for many of the cabinet secretaries and other folks, too, who work long hours, who are always at their jobs. You know, we hear people, oh, I'm in the office at 6 a.m. Go ahead and give me a call. You know, people staying till 7 p.m. at night and then taking their work home with them, working on the weekends. And some could argue, like it or not, the president of the United States should potentially make more money than he does as well, or she.
Well, if you look at an Ashton Carter making a couple of $100,000 as Secretary of Defense, that is a token amount of money. That's like working for a dollar, mm-hmm. in a sense. If you oversee a $500 billion enterprise with a couple of million people in it, if you, you know, the private sector, that would be a multi-million dollar salary job besides the stock options you would likely get. So you do it for public service, but definitely not for the salary.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what you always hear, right? I mean, that's how the government attracts those kind of folks into the government, right? I mean, the people who come from Google, the people who come from Walmart, the people who come from all of these big corporations who feel the need and want to give back to the government. And perhaps it can be said that they've made their money, right? Maybe they're not hurting for cash when they come into these government jobs. They've got enough to sustain their livelihoods while they're doing their tour of service in the government.
Julia Ziegler is Federal News Radio's web manager. And there's this idea of performance, too, that somebody commented on. Are people paid for performance?
Yeah. So the person's name was Linda. Linda says, the only overpaid and underperforming feds that I know about sit in Congress, where they work fewer days per week and fewer months per year than the regular federal workforce, take foreign vacations, get free parking at National Airport, free postage, a fancy gym, and yet produce nothing.
Well, there you have it. That's what they think of Congress. Well, you know, I've always envisioned, and many states still have this, the idea of the farmer legislator. You leave the farm, you leave, in modern times, the factory or whatever it is, go up, do the legislative thing, and go home again.
Mm-hmm.
That is such a dream now that it could never be. But there are states that have it like that. I think New Hampshire still does 30-day, 60-day sessions where people really are citizens that go up and legislate right. And then come home again. Because you look at, I think there's a certain corruption that comes in. Not bribes and that kind of thing, but a certain sense of entitlement and power and detachment from really what it is you're legislating over when you have people that are there decade after decade. You see this at the state level where they have full-time legislatures too.
I would say I think that issue of detachment that you brought up is key, though, too. I mean, I've always wondered that, right? If I think you do need time in your home state, and you do need time to speak with your constituents, right? But there's a lot of work that has to be done in Washington as well. So it's finding that balance, right? Because if you were here in Washington the entire time, you would be detached. You wouldn't know the issues. You know, you kind of get wrapped up in your own little world and what goes on in Washington. And you know, we always have that example of, you know, how much does a gallon of milk cost, right? And does the politician actually know how much a gallon of milk costs these
or
days?
Or a loaf of bread.
Right, exactly. And so I think there's that balance that they need to find. And probably some people do that better than others.